Avatar 2, let's talk about it.
The bad guy is still alive.
I will praise the last hour of this movie until I die.
Monstrous numbers in the box office.
It's Avatar, Avengers Endgame, Avatar 2.
Let's party. Life's always a party. Let's go, Paulie.
Heading back, baby. Heading to the back. World of Avatar.
No, Avatar 2, let's talk about it.
I can't stress enough how much I hate that intro.
How much I loved this movie. Let's talk about Avatar, because I've been meaning to talk about it for a while. Movie's been out for already like a month. Hit some huge box office numbers we're going to get into. We're going to get into our thoughts, opinions, the future, Avatar 3, 4, theme park expansions. This is what we're going to talk about because we need more Avatar in our lives, and we're excited to get into it.
Avatar 2, Way of Water. We're going to give our reactions, the pros and cons from each of us. But pre-show, I like how Paul goes, Ryan, you got the intro? Yeah, I got the intro. Next thing you know, Paul goes on a 20-minute rant with some, I don't even know what that intro was.
Because you weren't
going to
give the movie its justice, its due. Ryan, you know, spoiler, Ryan, I don't think was the biggest fan of it. So.
Well, we'll get into that. But first, I'll tell you who was a fan of the movie. Everybody else. I mean, if you know Avatar 2, you know Avatar. This movie hit monstrous numbers in the box office. So domestically, it was top 10 charts domestically. It stood at an astonishing $608 million domestically. It moved into the top 10 highest grossing movies of all time. It passed The Avengers, the first one.
Here in the States.
Domestically.
Here in the States, if you don't know.
I thought everybody was educated on that. Domestic. Oh, because we do have other countries listening.
We do.
So domestically here in the States, moved in the top 10, made over $608 million. A lot of people love the movie. But Paul, the numbers overall are even more astonishing.
Yeah, so right now it is currently the third highest grossing film of all time. It's Avatar, Avengers Endgame, Avatar 2. Which is insane.
But worldwide, Paul, the numbers are astonishing.
Yes. So Avatar 2 is now the third highest grossing film of all time worldwide. It is at $2.1 billion, slowly still gaining. It just surpassed James Cameron's other film, Titanic. So now James Cameron has three of the top four grossing films of all time.
Insane.
Three being earning over $2 billion at the worldwide box office.
Do you just think... we're going to get into our thoughts on the movie, but why do you think that is, that he's had three of the top five highest box office?
Just a visionary, I guess. People doubt.
Is that resources, though, you think? Like, or just his creative mind?
Creative mind. I think, you know, the idea of being able to want to make Avatar, at least the first one, it was, you know, in development for so long. And then really they held off on making it because the technology wouldn't do it justice. It wasn't there. And then, you know, it kind of grew in popularity due to the fact of changing the industry, adding 3D, making it really a spectacle to go to the movies. And I think that's kind of what we needed, you know, in 2022, you know, at the end of the year, moving into 2023, of like people wanting to go back to the theaters. You know, with streaming, there's so much competition. It's like, what's going to get people back in the seats? And it was this idea of spectacle and having to see it on a big screen or having to see an IMAX, all right? Like, with Adobe sound and like these special theaters. So people bought a ticket and they saw it. I saw it twice. So like it brought people back into the seats.
To your point, it is the biggest movie of the pandemic and post-pandemic eras, and only the sixth movie ever to pass $2 billion at the global box office. So that's saying something where, you know, post-pandemic, this is the movie.
And out of the six movies, James Cameron has half. Which is incredible. Like, if you don't like James Cameron, you have to respect what he's been doing. And I'm very curious to see the future, right? Like 3, 4, 5. Disney has greenlit the fourth and fifth, you know, entries in this saga. The third one, we're going to talk about a little bit more down the road in this show, but it's already, you know, 90% been shot. So, but they were basically waiting for the box office to kind of end and see where the second one did. Did people want to go back and see it? Were people still interested in it, right? Was the brand actually growing after, what is it, like 13 years from the first film? And The answer is a resounding yes.
Yeah. So, like, we talk about how great the movie is and how he's hitting all these box office records, but there was a lot of pressure on Avatar 2. James Cameron had a lot of pressure on Avatar 2. We talk about theme parks on this show. The movie had to have success in order to build the franchise in the movies and also build the theme park. So, I mean, say what you want about James Cameron, but he's hitting these numbers, and he had a lot of pressure on Avatar 2. Avatar 2 had to succeed so that you can green light the fourth Avatar, the fifth Avatar, and even get into some talks about expanding the parks of Avatar. So it was a lot of pressure.
I'm very excited for the future of Avatar. I was very happy when I heard that 4 and 5 were greenlit. They've already filmed, like I said, most of 3. They filmed part of 4 because James Cameron was talking about the kids in the film. The second one, obviously, revolves a lot around family and the kids of our main characters. Just wanted to keep them in their current age to help the aging process, because these films take a very long time to film and create.
Yeah.
So they did film a little bit of 4, but I'm excited to see where the story goes. And I think there's a lot of potential. People were talking about possible an animated series on Disney Plus, because it's obviously very expensive to make. So maybe if we want to continue the story with animation, we could do that there. How could you do a Disney Plus show possibly? Is there room for expansion in the theme parks in the future, right? So a lot of different directions, but let's talk about the film right now. Like, what's happening right now in this world? Avatar 2, we both saw it. I saw it twice in theaters. What was your immediate takeaway, Rye?
So we'll go through what I liked first. And there are things that I liked a lot about the movie. The first thing that I will give credit to, and I gave credit to the first Avatar, are that the visuals, the color, the resolution of the shots are speechless. I mean, they are phenomenal shots. It's almost like, you know, the saying, Paul, where it's like a picture speaks 1,000 words.
Yeah.
There's moments in this movie where I get on the storyline and how I don't enjoy the storyline. But if you really think about it and you watch the movie and the water shots of the whales, you don't need a good dialogue. You don't need a good storyline to carry the movie. It's because those shots and visuals are so good that you don't need that to make it a good movie. You know what I'm saying?
It was really interesting because as a filmmaker, I mean, I went to film school and we talk about how stories are made and how everything needs to have a point and that everything has to be leading up, you know, everything's on track, right? And there has to be meaning for certain things. So it's like, why would you leave this in? Because it doesn't really advance the plot, right? So a lot of problems with the first Avatar are not problems, but like what executives and filmmakers had about the film was that they were just showing a lot of the world. And it was like, well, why is he riding the Banshee for an extra 3 minutes? Like,
right. Like
we don't need to see that because it doesn't really advance the plot. It really doesn't do anything. And James Cameron talked about how, well, if that's what I want to see, if that's what the audience wants to see, like, we got to give the people what they want. And it's a different way to look at storytelling and immersing you into the world. And I think that's why Pandora is just so immersive and people want to go back and have wanted to go back for this second entry in the saga. So there's a lot of parts in that where, you know, we're in the water and we're exploring the underwater world and you're exploring the whale creatures, right? The Tokun and how...
The Tokun. Let's call them whales. Let's call them goddamn
and
whales.
Like, there's a lot there, right, that really isn't expanding the plot, but it's like, I want to be underwater and I want to experience what these characters on this fictional world are experiencing.
And
so,
that's where my maturity came out, Paul.
It's learning
that, I saw the movie. People are like, oh, this is a long movie, blah, blah, blah. I watched the movie. Then as I go back to analyze the movie, I see the success it's having in the box office. My maturity gets to see, like, you know what? These extended scenes are worth it. Like, the visuals are so beautiful where an extended cocoon ride is worth it. And when you leave that movie, in my opinion, it doesn't feel like a long movie. I think the time and length of the movie is warranted. And I don't know if you feel the same way.
I do. I think the first part is great. I think the family aspect, getting back into it, I think the middle's a little wonky. I really like the underwater stuff. And I will praise the last hour of this movie until I die. Like, when they get in the final battle sequence in the water, you know, spoiler alert, we're gonna talk about the story a little bit. So hopefully you've seen the film at this point. I mean, clearly a lot of people have. So we hope that you were a part of that. When that final battle's taking place and the ship is sinking and it's on fire and we're doing these battles, it's just, one, it's gorgeous, it's so stunning. Two, you are in the action and you're going through this huge battle. And I was locked in. I was locked in with the villains. I was locked in with the family dynamic. I was caring about the characters and their lives. Like, I was locked in. And I think that last hour was just spectacular.
All right. So I'm going to play counter argument here.
Okay.
You love the last hour. He said he would die.
I'd die
on the stand for the last hour. I also want to go back to the family dynamic, but we'll do that after I address this. Now, the water people, they went MIA in the final fight scene.
They did. That is correct.
It's like, okay, we'll go with you to get your kids and save them. It's almost like, okay, we got a whole army now. But then once they get to the ship of the humans, it's like, where did they go? It's almost like it just vanished. Like, I don't know. Like, that dynamic was just weird to me.
So that has been a critique. I think I'm curious to go back and look at it. I really feel as though they probably left when everyone else of the humans left and dispersed as well. I think there was a lot of battle going on with like different ships. And then when I think everything
started... Yeah, but that started, was a very brief shot.
But I think when everything caught on fire and everything was started to sink and all the humans that were left, at least left alive, were leaving, I think then they left. Because then it really became against the villain of the film, General Courage, and the family, like, and Spider, right? Like, his kid. It was kind of their story and their fighting. And... you know, he didn't have anyone else on his side either, right? Like, the humans still weren't there. Like, they left. So you had the water people, they left. Like, it wasn't
It's just
their...
weird, though. It's Way of Water. We get to the final fight scene that Paul will die on.
Yeah, but they were there. Just, they participated.
They're doing side fights that are shown for 30 seconds of an hour-long fight scene.
You're following the main characters. What else do you want?
I don't
know. If I'm watching an Avengers film, I want to watch Iron Man fight and Iron Man's battle and the rest of the Avengers battle. I don't care as much about maybe there's a firefighter or a police officer that's helping the battle. Like, I don't care about them. I want to watch Iron Man. And this is, I want to watch the main characters fight.
But they kind of just disperse. Like, there's no real, like, goodbye. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just kind of just, like, evaporate out of the
ship,
movie.
The ship is burning. The ship is burning. Hey, man, it's been great. We'll shake hands. Let's get out of this fire. No, it's like everyone left. Everyone's like, we all understand they're all adults. They got to get out of there.
So back to the family dynamic. I think that was actually a very important part of the film, or just the overall arching thing of the film.
Yeah, the premise of it. Yeah.
Because we talk about them greenlighting 4 and 5. It's like they almost had to make a different storyline with the kids and make them the vocal point of this movie, because they're going to have to build those characters now if they want to have a longer successful franchise. So I do like that they have the family aspect of this movie. As well as Avatar is such an abstract, like, idea. Like, they're freaking blue people running around and swimming underwater and stuff. So when you add the family dynamic, it allows, like, humans like us who watch these movies to, like, to gain actual feelings.
It's something
that's an important part of the movie. It's like, okay, these guys have the same family dynamic as my family. It's very relatable. So once us, the humans, we get to relate to these characters or abstract beings... We can then feel more emotion when they go through something, because it's like, oh, we're a little similar.
Yeah.
So that's an important part of the movie, which I thought that I liked a lot too.
Those elements are what ground the film and make you connect with it, right? I mean, it's so funny you talk about it. It's like, oh, it's just these people and these blue people in space. I mean, to me, it's like I go to Star Wars. I'm like, yeah, these guys have light swords, right? Like, nothing makes sense. You're watching a fantasy story and you're having that suspension of disbelief. So... Yeah, I'm a big fan of it, man.
Because when that tycoon died, I was sad. I was with my girlfriend. She was crying. And you don't get that feeling unless you add the human element and the human dad-son relationship that other sons go through. You don't get that emotions unless you build that up first. And it's like just like with an animal or like your pet or dog.
Well, here's a great part, right? You said you didn't love the story that much. Like, that was part of that storytelling. Like, you have to build those relationships or you don't, you won't care for them, right? Like, for me, I mean, huge spoiler alert, right? Let's talk about the son for a little bit. Like, the oldest son.
You gotta hit the alarm when there's a spoiler.
Spoiler alert. At the end, right, we have the oldest son who dies. And, you know, most of the film, we're exploring and connecting with the middle son, right? We're connecting with the younger son. And I think he will really take us for the next couple films. And it's like, I wish we did spend a little bit of time with the oldest, but not as much as I would have hoped to have the impact of his death at the end. Did I feel it? Absolutely. But if you killed off the middle son, I think it would have been like game over. A lot of people would have really, really felt that.
That's a good point.
You know, because we really spent the majority of our time with him, not the oldest. You had those connections, but.
But would it be too predictable?
I don't think so. It's like you're with him the whole time. You spend all this time with him and then you kill him off. It's like, well, where do we go from here? Like, if anything, it's more unexpected that you're killing off this guy you spend so much time with. But at the same time, you're building that connection, that story. And you're making people care about the character and you're grounding it in reality. I think there's a lot of great stuff.
All right, I got one more good thing before we get to the negatives.
What's your last good thing?
I love that. Well, I guess it could transition into my negatives, but I love that Jake Sully became fully Avatar. Like, I like that that happened. Like, I knew it was happening, but I didn't like the first movie where it was like, okay, he's back in a lab. Okay, he's back as an avatar. Okay, he's back in a lab. Okay, he's back in a... Like, that got a little tiresome, so I like that he was fully Avatar for this movie and probably the foreseeable future.
Well, this was good. Yeah, I mean, forever. He's not going back. He's an avatar, or he's, you know, a Na'vi. So he's with that family. He's got his own family. He's in that world, so, like, that's his perspective. And then we get the human element, because it really is that battle, right? And I think... go back to Star Wars, right? You have like the light side and the dark side, the rebellion and like whatever. So you need two sides of the same coin to fight, to be able to connect and to progress the story forward and to feel both sides. And you got to show both sides. So it's like without the human elements of Jake Sully from like a human perspective, you're fully back in with General Quaritch and the human element and mission of why they have returned to Pandora. And I'm really mostly excited for, I think, the seeds that they set for the human race to basically invade the planet. I'd be curious to see what's happening back on Earth. Why do they really have to leave? What does it look like? The city that they were currently building was a very small seed that they were like, yeah, we're building this city right now, right? And you kind of saw it start to form. And it's like, well, what does that look like? Like, if you actually start to really take over this planet, what does it do for the native people on the planet? And we know everything is a reference to, you know, our own history, right? Like, it's, you have settlers coming into the native land and like taking over the land. And that's a personal connection. And that's something too, that's like, that grounds everything in our history and our reality here on Earth. So yeah, I'm excited for like what the element for that.
With that being said, I'm over the humans.
Okay.
I hate like 1 and 2 with the humans being the bad guys. I'm over it. Not only am I over the humans, like I want to see some Avatar on Avatar action, which we're going to get to. We might be getting in the third one. So back to my point, I'm over the human elements being the bad guys. It's getting a little dragged on. With that being said, the what's his name?
General Quaritch.
General Quaritch. He is the bad guy in the film. This heroic hour-long fight scene that Paul dies by never ends. It never ends. The bad guy is still alive.
Yeah, but he almost died.
That doesn't matter. The bad guy is still alive, so that bad guy is still going to continue for a third movie. Well, I don't know how he's going to work in, but I'm over the guy. You got to kill him. You got to kill the guy.
No, you got to kill the guy. No, you don't. Because what's happening is... General Quaritch is set up for a redemption arc.
I'm over this guy.
No, he's set up for a redemption arc because he starts out as the villain, and I really like him in the first film because he's very unapologetic. He does it because he was told to. He's a military man. He doesn't really have those morals or values for what he's destroying or for the people he's separating. Like, he really is a true villain who doesn't have all this reasoning for what he's doing. It's just like, I'm doing what I'm told. I'm a military man. You know, this is what I'm doing. And I had a lot of respect for it, and I really liked it. And
so
I think,
what do you mean?
But so his redemption arc is becoming this huge villain, right? Who really, his only purpose was to be the villain. And now because he, you know, his first being died and now he was reincarnated through this avatar. He has the son. Obviously it's not his technically his biological son. But his son, he's feeling more emotions for the son. I think he's becoming closer with the Na'vi. He was doing all the Na'vi things. Like, he had his own, his Banshee. He had to learn how to do that. So he's kind of getting integrated into the Avatar way, or the Na'vi way as an Avatar. And I think he's going to find this path of accepting who he is, accepting the Na'vi, accepting the world of Pandora, and wanting to save it. Other than what he originally came to Pandora, which was to destroy it.
That makes sense. Because he can't play the bad guy again.
And that's his arc. I think he's going to be completely turned, you know, 180. And I think it'll be really great.
So let's get to a couple changes or improvements that we read from the film. Less human for me. Better bad guy. And like, as I talk about it, maybe a more unique storyline. Like, I know we talk about the family element, but it's like the idea of the humans pushing them back, stealing their land. Like, let's get something different. Because one and two were the same. You know what I'm saying? Paul doesn't know what I'm saying, but I want something unique.
Yeah, I know. It's like, let's go back to Star Wars here. You got the light side, the dark side. How many films you got?
Nine.
What do? All they do is fight each other. Each side wants to win, and we've got nine films where we're still kind of, you know, we're still kind of fighting. The Rebellion, I guess, won at the end. Barely. I don't really know.
This guy, big Star Wars guy. What are no improvements in this on where you would like this series to go?
So I think there are a few directions, right? The first, I think you could go towards more human elements. I think the idea of like
more human elements. No, I don't want less
right?
humans.
Like it's the city. I think, right? The first two films, if anything, the first two films were like 90% Na'vi in the world of Pandora. Like, why don't
No.
Yeah.
The first film, you didn't see a Na'vi till like an hour and a half in.
That's not true.
Oh, I think it's true.
That's not true.
I think it's pretty true.
Well, actually, Ryan, I actually took a look at the movie, and the first instance of a Na'vi is actually at 41 minutes and 23 seconds. So kind of a bit far off from an hour and 30 minutes. So
I'm pretty sure you didn't see a Na'vi until like an hour into the first film.
Maybe because of the special effects, like they held off a little bit and they wanted the reveal.
I remember watching the first one. I was like, there's humans in this movie.
But
it was 10 years ago, though.
Yes. And I think, but the main storyline, everything was really Na'vi centric. I think the idea of getting the opposite side of the coin and maybe showcasing, you know, Neytiri, which is Zoe Saldana's character, and like the family, not bringing them to Earth, because I really don't want to leave Pandora. There were people talking about bringing them to Earth to kind of see the conditions, why both the human race and the Na'vi kind of have to come together and live on Pandora in harmony. I think at the end of the saga, like what is it all leading to? But I love the idea of building a huge city and more humans coming to Pandora and seeing like what happens there, right? Like it's just getting worse for the Na'vi. Like what's going to happen? I do agree with you that we need some inner tribal conflict between the Na'vi, right? Like I think everyone's just been so, I mean, right? If people are fighting you and you're seeing another guy who's also on that side of the ward, like you're not going to fight because you know there's a bigger battle out there.
We share the same land.
Right, yeah.
Live different ways.
You share the same interest. So it's like, why are we going to fight together or against each other?
There's bigger problems then.
Correct. So it's like, I would like to see a Na'vi group that just doesn't agree. It's like, we're going to keep to our own. You know, the idea is that we should all live peacefully on Pandora together and, you know, we should be together. But at the same time, like, don't bring your problems in, you know, in our land. And I think it's just going to continue down that path.
Yeah.
But I think that's the future of it, right? I think, weirdly enough, I think, unfortunately, I love the other series called Avatar The Last Airbender. And there's been a lot of complaints where they feel as though James Cameron is kind of ripping off that world, right? Like, we started with the Na'vi, which were like jungle people, which I guess you could kind of say were your like earth characters in Avatar, or even kind of air, like flowy, probably air. You go air because of the Banshees and the Ikran and like the idea of living up in the mountains like a nomad, right? So like airbenders. And then you're going to the water people and these like people who live by water, who go by the way of water. And then it's like, if we go to ash people, it's like you're hitting the Fire Nation at this point. And then you're having, it's like, where do you go next, right?
Space.
No, but like where you could go next.
The desert.
Like, no, you're not hitting. You should
the
watch
wilderness.
You should watch Avatar, please.
You're going to Texas.
You would understand where I'm going with this.
The cartoon one?
Yes. It would basically go towards like Arctic people, right? Like this idea of the water, like other, I guess, water that way of like Arctic. And James Cameron has kind of talked about how he wants to explore different tribes and the world of Pandora. So,
couple questions.
Yeah.
Do we know why we waited 10 years for the second Avatar? And so it's like you wait 10 years, you have the first one, and now it's like boom, boom, boom. Two comes out, three's coming out, quick turnaround, four or five greenlit. It's like, what was that big gap for?
It's all technology based. The first one took a lot of time to develop the facial, the motion capture for the photo. It took a very long time
because they film in a very unique, different way than any movie out there.
Yeah, it was really motion capture, the development of it. Because if you watch the scenes take place, they're in, I forget what it's called. I don't know if it's called the volume, but there's something very similar called the volume, which is used with special effects. But they're basically playing in this black box theater almost, where they just kind of have like sets hanging around and they have cameras kind of 360 kind of filming everybody. All the actors also have cameras towards their face and on their face taking their motion capture. But a lot of it needed to be developed to be able to function in water. So it was this idea of James Cameron wanted to develop the tribe in water and film stuff in water, and the motion capture wasn't there yet. So it was kind of just another step of waiting for it to be developed. Also getting it greenlit by the studio, how much money, you know, it was, it, I forget, I think it was $350 million to make it, which is, I think, the second most expensive film of all time. All
right. And then before we get into the speculations of like where the story is going, like there's articles written about where people think the movie's going or the franchise is going in 3, 4, 5. Let's talk about the viewing experience, because I saw it in 2D. You saw it in 3D. Obviously, the people out there are saying that you probably should see Avatar 2 in 3D. So like what is different about the experience, or why should you see it in 3D?
So with streaming, it is becoming harder and harder to get people to go to the movies, right? People don't want to go to the movies. They don't want to spend the extra money. They don't want to go out of their house. They have all this content in their home. So the movie going experience has kind of gone in the direction of a premiere event, like a sporting event or a Broadway show, for example. So it takes a lot to get people out of the house. And when you go out of the house, you want to be able to see that premiere. You want to have that premium experience of like, what am I getting the best value for my money and the best experience possible? The theaters have upgraded all the seats to be leather recliners, right? A lot of the seats now, they can heat your ass. We've talked about that too. They got heating, right?
Kid show.
Yeah. Gotta heat that thing up. And
gotta heat that thing up. Gotta heat that thing up to watch the tycoons.
The tycoons. And I think the experience just has to be better. And at the end of the day, when you're seeing something as beautiful as the world of Pandora and what James Cameron and that crew has created for the screen, you should be seeing on a premiere screen, first of all, which is usually an IMAX theater or an Adobe theater, or if you go to like Cinemark, it's a Cinemark XD theater, and AMC is called their AMC Prime AMC, whatever it's called. That's like their premiere theater. It's basically upgraded audio, upgraded screens and projectors, all those kind of things. And you're just seeing it on the largest screen in that theater possible.
So your argument is that to make it different than to watch Avatar at home, you're getting out of the house. So as you're getting out of the house, you might as well just put on some 3D glasses.
No, you might.
That's your argument.
No, you might as well. If you're doing it, you might as well see it in the best possible viewing experience.
And you believe that it's better. It's a better viewing experience 3D. Avatar. Does that differ per movie?
Well, no, this is the difference. You can see movies on an IMAX screen that are not shot in 3D. This film was shot with 3D cameras.
Gotcha.
It was purposely made to be seen by the most people in a 3D atmosphere.
I didn't get that memo.
So when you do that and you put it on a 2D screen, or you put it on a smaller screen in your movie theater, or you put it on your TV at home, you are not getting the premiere experience that the filmmakers and the crew originally intended you to see that film. And
that
I think
makes
you're doing yourself a disservice by not seeing it in 3D and seeing it at a premiere experience on the largest screen possible with the best sound system, and just put on the damn glasses. The glasses have gone fine. You're going to experience it better. You won't even, after 30 seconds, you're not going to notice they're on your face. I saw it in 3D twice because I do it right.
I didn't know it was shot in 3D.
Well, you just don't pay
that
attention.
That was just a rookie mistake. All right, so let's get into... What is that?
It's Ryan not, not doesn't pay attention.
It's not a pro tip. It's not a spoiler.
Ryan doesn't
I don't know what
see
he's doing.
That is in 3D. Ryan needs to put on some 3D glasses and start paying attention to
the
world.
I didn't even know it was possible to shoot a movie in 3D. Is that going to be like a trend now where like
Pro tip, if you're making a blockbuster film, shoot your movie in 3D or shoot it with IMAX cameras. Goes like, you didn't
like
know
a
that?
Scorsese and Tarantino go to shoot 3D movies, or is it just going to be like action figure movies?
No, it depends what it depends what the story you're telling, Ryan. Come on.
Whatever. All right, so let's get into pro tip. Some speculation in what Avatar 3 is going to be and future installments. So we've mentioned it a couple times, the Ash people. I keep talking about how I hate how the antagonists are the humans. They're the mean ones pushing people back. We need some angry Na'vi, some mean Na'vi people. And I think we're going to get that in the third one with the Ash people. So they might be mean Na'vi, Paul.
I think, you know, that's what they've kind of been speculating to. I think that's what's going to happen. James Cameron wants to experience different tribes and different landscapes on the world of Pandora. So the Ash people, I think, is our next venture with Avatar 3. A possible name for that is Avatar the Seed Bearer. Do we know what that means?
No, we don't know what that means.
I think it
doesn't even have any correlation with volcanic ash people.
No, but I think it doesn't have to be. I think it's kind of planting the seeds for the future. Maybe I think so. Talking kind of about one character we haven't really discussed, Kiri. A lot of the siblings were calling her Kitty. Kitty. She's like the adopted one who was kind of reborn from the person who died prior. She, I believe, is going to be a main focal point moving forward. She's the connection to Awa, which is like the god of Pandora, the living, breathing planet, really. So I think maybe planting the seeds for her a little bit, like what is she really doing in the future? We kind of saw that when she connected with the ancestor tree. She kind of had that seizure. She was connecting, right? I think, you know, weirdly enough, going back to Star Wars, right? Like you have Anakin, right? If you know anything about Star Wars, you have Anakin, who was this just like Jesus. What are we talking about?
Then you got Chewbacca.
But if you talk about Anakin, right?
And Baby Yoda.
Stop. No, stop.
Oh, I got a Star Wars thing over here.
What's like?
How do we get the playing charades of Star Wars?
Immaculate birth, right?
I'm
so you have Kitty or Kitty, depending, you know, who's talking. She was kind of like, she was this immaculate conception. So she was, as I was saying, Star Wars, like Anakin, she wasn't, she had no parents. And it was kind of the same thing. She was kind of born from this entity we know as Awa. So I think maybe
those people tend to be really weird in these storylines.
But I mean, she was
special powers. They get really weird. So I could see her becoming a main character in one of these
films.
And
I think maybe more for her powers, exploring her character more, planting the seeds for the future of this maybe
I like that
collaboration between the Na'vi and humanity having to come together. I think maybe that's the future we're moving
into. I'm going to be honest. It took you a very long time to get there. You tried to go back to the Star Wars analogy and tie things in. But at the end of the day, your hypothesis is pretty good. The seed bearer, like maybe she's the seed. Like, you know, that's a good hypothesis.
Then number four, people were talking about speculation. Avatar, the Tolkien rider, and Avatar 5 could be the quest for Awa. I think Awa really is our main goal here. I think the
what is
story,
Awa
is like that entity, what we would consider God, right? Like the overseeing person. But in the storyline of Pandora, Awa is a real thing, right? They have proof that she's real. She's kind of the living, breathing. She's kind of like Mother Nature, but a little bit more of that for Pandora. She cares for all the Na'vi. They're kind of her children. So this Immaculate Conception of Kitty is kind of like her daughter, who I guess we would consider God to Jesus. We're not going to get religious over here, but like those kind of stories, right? So I think Awa is really the end goal here and exploring the world of Pandora and this living, breathing entity. And Kitty is just kind of that personification of that entity.
I'm excited. Any doubts in maybe James Cameron doesn't direct any of these three upcoming films?
So that has been a thing too, where he's going to finish three and then he will not come back and direct four and five. He'll be a producer. He'll probably be integral to the story moving forward, but he will not be the main director. I honestly think that they're just taking a huge toll on him. Like the first one took him 10 years. This one take him 12 years to make. Obviously three, he basically already shot. They shot two and three back to back. And he's already written 4 and 5. So he has his handprint all over this. This is obviously his franchise. But at the same time, I think directing it, they might want some fresh eyes and he might want a break. So I could see 4 and 5 going to a new director.
Yeah, so there it is. Way of Water, Avatar 2 review summary. What's ahead? Fun episode. Oh, you want to talk about the expansion of theme parks in
Avatar
World.
Thing with Pandora, talking about expanding the world of the theme parks. We do have Avatar, the world, Pandora, the world of Avatar, in the Animal Kingdom here in Orlando. And Bob Iger, who is the CEO of Disney, he, on a recent earnings call, he was talking about possibly bringing Pandora or a Pandora experience to the Disneyland Resort. What that looks like, we don't know. People were speculating, is it a version of Pandora, right? Is it a smaller version? I could see trying to squeeze in, because they don't have a lot of land out there in California, a smaller version, just like last week we were talking about Nintendo and like Super Nintendo World. Like, you have the bigger world in Orlando where they have the space, and then maybe in California you downsize that, use one attraction, you still show the floating mountains, and you kind of get the atmosphere of the land. So maybe they do that. There's also this really cool experience that's happening in Singapore, in the Singapore airport, where it's kind of like a walkthrough attraction of Avatar. They have an animatronic Ikon, which is the Banshee. It's life size. It's absolutely ginormous. People are like, please don't get it, because they were relocating it and they said they didn't know where they were going to relocate it to. People are hoping that that'll probably go to LA, to Disney, or not LA, but to California and Disneyland. So I think that's more likely for a short term representation of Avatar in the Disneyland parks, other than building another Pandora, because I think that was just so massive and such a massive undertaking for Disney the first time. But it shows with this second film, the box office success, that there is a need for this story and this world, and people are interested. And it's like, if people want to, you know, go to the watch these movies multiple times and continue the story, it's like, that's what we love theme parks for, like immersing ourselves in this world. So it's like, continue to do it. And I'm excited because we've kind of talked how, for some reason, Avatar really hasn't translated over to merchandise.
Yeah, we did.
It's
about
weird.
That.
It's like, you don't really see a lot of Avatar t-shirts or mugs or hats, or even when you go to Pandora, the merchandise doesn't sell as well in the gift shops. And it's like, why? Like, why don't you want to? I mean, I don't own anything Avatar. So I love the movie. So I don't know. I think that's weird. But for sure, Pandora is a huge hit. And immersing yourself in the theme park land, I could see Disney, you know, now it's really their own property. Because the first time when they built Avatar, it was owned by 20th Century Fox.
Yeah.
Now they own Fox. So I think now they have full investment in it and can build more land. So just expanding the world. I'm excited for more films. I'm excited for more expansion in the theme parks. We're getting more Avatar. That's what I want to hear. If you like this topic, if you like Avatar, tell us below in the comment section. Last words.
Like, subscribe. Hey, stay with us. Maybe you'll be here for Avatar 3 review.
Maybe.
Maybe be here for Avatar 4 review. Maybe be here for Avatar 5 review.
Maybe when I turn Ryan into an Avatar and we get this thing kicking. Okay. That's it for us, as always.
Music, take us out.
See you later.
Later.